This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner is Wes Durham. Wes, 24 hours ago, it was like, yikes, what is going on here? Lost 6 of 7 to the big, bad, mighty Big Ten. But last night, the Atlantic Coast Conference brought out big brooms. Big, big, giant brooms. 4 up, 4 down. How about that? By the way, how you doing? You all right?
Had them all the way.
No
doubt. Had them all the way, right? Never
in
doubt. None of it. Absolutely none of it.
It's all eight. All I know is it's WWWW last night, which was good because I'd much rather discuss going 4-0 than going 1-6. I will promise you every day of the week on ACC Network, I'd much rather talk about wins than losses.
Let me ask you this. Can you give me the final ACC Big Ten Challenge scoreboard?
Yes.
After last night?
I can. Big Ten 6,
okay.
ACC 5, COVID 3.
Right.
That's your final scoreboard.
Got
6-5-3.
Okay. I wanted to make sure I had that written down the right way before we get to 8 o'clock when Seth Greenberg's going to join us. Kurt Weiler will be here from the Tallahassee Democrat to talk about FSU. Debbie Antonelli in the 9 o'clock hour, and also Paul Zeiss and Sean Bedford. Once again, we go quad box here on Packer and Durham to get ready for – hey, we got football tonight, by the way.
Yeah, game day.
Pittsburgh at Georgia Tech. Week 14 starts tonight in the ACC. So we'll talk about the Panthers and Jackets. Last salvo for Pat Narduzzi's team, by the way, Mark, to make a statement. And you said this yesterday. I thought it was appropriately stated, by the way. We have some accounting games on the ledger in football this weekend. So looking forward to that too.
Yeah, it's the first of about a handful of games that will affect our accounting on Monday. None of these games will have any impact whatsoever on the ultimate ACC championship game with number 2 Notre Dame and number 3 Clemson, which will be the game that day. Hopefully, knock on wood, that we have it here in Charlotte. But all these games this week seem to have teams attached at the hip, right? Pitt, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, the Commonwealth Cup will be a good one. North Carolina, Miami will be out of sight. All these combinations. Mm-hmm. Wake, Louisville, I think Scott Satterfield needs to have a nice game this week. And Wake, we haven't seen the Deacs in a month and change,
right,
despite an opt-out here or there. So, again, knock on wood that we get these games. But it seems like all these teams appear to be kind of connected to the hip as far as where they stand in the ACC. But let's start with hoops, though. I know it's game day for football,
right,
but because last night Florida State Indiana was the marquee game. Would you have something to add? Go right ahead.
I'm glad you used the term connected at the hip, because after watching two nights of ACC basketball and the basketball we got, we got a lot of teams that are just kind of like right there with one another, it seems like. Now there's a difference. Don't get me wrong. We think there's a difference, but there's still more unknown than known, as we said yesterday. But we had close ball games. We had games literally connected at the hip in some respect last night. And let's start, as you said, with Florida State and Indiana last night, because the Noles, you thought it was imperative Florida State win. And they won, but they had to win for the 10th straight time in overtime in order to get the victory over the Hoosiers last night at the Tucker Center in Tallahassee. Scotty Barnes did not put up big numbers scoring-wise, but might have been the best player on the floor last night. He and Trace Jackson Davis singularly were fantastic for their respective teams. Raekwon Gray going baseline there. But this ball game ends up being 69-67 in overtime last night, Mark.
Barnes made two big shots. He, like you said, didn't score a lot. And this was a really tight game. This was a back and forth. And if you love college hoops, I'm not saying it was aesthetically the most pleasing thing to watch, but it was a W for Leonard Hamilton. I thought it was really important for their team. There's only their second game of the year. And for the league, after getting a black eye the night before with Duke, North Carolina, and Syracuse all losing by double digits. And for Florida State to hold serve at home, given what we saw on day one of the challenge, I thought was really, really important. But Barnes made two big shots, and that was basically the game winner right there, the little Euro step for the W. But he made a big three for the first basket for the Noles in overtime, which was really important because Indiana had made a three to go up three, and that was the last time they were going to make a shot in OT. But this was a back and forth. Yep. Hey, you didn't know who was going to win this game at any point in time. And, again, two good teams, but really important for Florida State to get the win, to kind of save a little face for the ACC after an ugly day one. And as I pointed out, the ACC brought out the brooms last night with a sweep. But that was I thought that was the marquee game and a really important win for the conference, just to kind of restore a little bit of pride and normalcy in the fact that, hey, Leonard's built such a good program at Tallahassee, and they're going to be good again. And again, they seldom, if ever, lose at home. That is now 40 consecutive non-conference wins at home, 24 straight period. And you mentioned the 10 straight wins now in overtime. That's what good teams do. Find ways to win. Still talented. It's awfully early. But Barnes with the big Euro step for the win on that one. No question.
MJ Walker, by the way, 19 last night for the Seminoles. Raquan Gray, a dozen points, 9 rebounds. Florida State got away with, and I use the term got away with, shooting 52% at the free throw line last night.
Yeah, it's got to be better.
That was a team that shot almost 80% last year, shoots 52% at the free throw line last night, and lives to tell about it. That doesn't happen much. Leonard Hamilton's team, I'm sure, will get some extra free throw shooting in. They also only shot 36% from the floor last night. And I told you Trace Jackson Davis was tremendous. He had like 20-some points and 17 rebounds last night for Indiana. He and Scotty Barnes made big play after big play last night for their respective schools. Good win for Florida State, by the way. So that was game one last night. And I think Florida State, Pat, correct me if I'm wrong, 2-0, they've delivered. Now, are they a finished product? By no means. But Florida State looks the part of what we thought Florida State could be. Fair after two games? It's a small, small sample size.
It's a tiny sample size. I would tell you, given what we thought Virginia was going to look like and where they are right now, they got work to do. Duke has a ton of work to do. We'll talk about Coach K later on. North Carolina needs to improve, but I kind of saw a little fight with them against Iowa. Louisville, you know, it's a shame, like I said yesterday, that we weren't going to be able to see them play in the challenge at Wisconsin, which would have been a really good game. But, yeah, Florida State's going to stick their nose in everybody's business. I think at the end of the day, you kind of feel confident that, you know, whether they finish first, second, third, whatever, that they're going to be in the mix at some point in time, whatever this college hoop season happens to look like. But, yeah, but again, Leonard's built a really, really good program.
No question. All right, we started yesterday afternoon, a little late afternoon contest at Little John Coliseum. Clemson led early, led often, buried Maryland, 67-51. I'm going to use the term buried back because it was never close. I don't think I ever caught a glance of it, and the Terps are within 7. Let's put it that way.
Well, I can promise you I didn't catch a glance of it because I was working in the afternoon. These matinees make it difficult for me. But I did check in on scores during the commercial breaks on SiriusXM, and we don't have many commercial breaks, by the way. And it was 40-15. And for a second there, I was like, man, did Dabo schedule a football game? I'm sorry. It's 40-15. No, that's a basketball score? Oh, Brad Brownell now, 2-0 against the Big Ten by himself. Already beat Purdue. And destroyed Maryland. Again, keep in mind, Clemson was the team that escorted Maryland out of the league at the ACC tournament. That was the last time we saw Maryland as an ACC member. It was Clemson kicking them to the curb in the ACC tournament. And hopefully they're enjoying that Big Ten money because they got smacked yesterday. Tigers might be pretty good, Wes.
Yep. Mir Sims had 16 for Clemson last night or yesterday afternoon. Played like a veteran guy, knocking down threes. And remember a couple of years ago when he'd pull up for three, people in the building would hold their breath. It's not that way anymore. He has absolutely spent enough time over the last year or so refining that, and it is a weapon in his game. Can't tell you how well he's played to start here. Clemson jumped to the lead. They made 5 threes in the opening 9 minutes, and Maryland didn't have an answer. Tigers were plus 6 turnovers, even on the glass, against a Maryland team that can really rebound it. And they hit 9 threes, and Sims was one of 4 players in double figures. Good, good win. Clemson, by the way, plays Alabama on Saturday in Atlanta at State Farm Arena downtown as part of a doubleheader event there. So, I just think Clemson's one of those teams Pac's got a chance.
No doubt. I will go back to our interview with Brad Brunell a couple days ago, and we kind of kidded around, who do you think you are? You think you're Leonard Hamilton playing all these guys? Go look at the bench points from Clemson yesterday. And again, I didn't see the game because I was doing radio. But you go back and look at just the stats, 25 points from their bench. And he again, Brad may have one of those teams where he's got really good leadership. We keep hearing about teams saying, can we get old? Amir Sims is a great leader, been down there, seems like 100 years. But the Tigers have been a really impressive team early. Mississippi State, Purdue, and destroyed Maryland. While we're sitting there talking about what's the top look like, that could possibly be a team that we thought could be in the middle that might make some noise going up ahead. You mentioned the Alabama game coming up. I think Alabama's on probation, if I'm not mistaken, but still going to play the game. But that game on the road at Virginia Tech next week will be a really good litmus test for both those teams because we're not quite sure now about the Hokies after the great win against Nova and just absolutely laid an egg against Penn State. But that'll be a good game next week.
Let's pivot to game three. May not have been the favorite, but the Jackets turned out to be the winner. 75-64 in Lincoln last night. Slow start for Georgia Tech. Had some foul trouble. Moses Wright didn't play well. Typically, Pac, here's the encouraging thing for Josh Pastner. Typically, these were the kind of games where they would just kind of fade on the road, right? This team did not fade. In fact, turned it up in the second half. And they are playing with Moses Wright as kind of the five, I noticed last night. A lot more than maybe you would expect. They go small. Here's a lineup on the floor right now that's pretty small for Pastner last night. Michael DeVoe knocked some shots down, and in the second half, Jose Alvarado went crazy. He was backing out to shoot threes. Georgia Tech won comfortably 75-64. Despite being out-rebounded last night by 8 on the glass, they were plus 7 turnover margin. Alvarado 24, Moses Wright 13 for the winning Jackets.
I don't know. Would you say it was comfortable, Wes? I mean, with 7.5 minutes to go, it's a tie game. I mean, and you're like, kind of like the Florida State-Indiana game, you're like, I don't know which way this thing's going to go. But you mentioned Alvarado. He went back-to-back threes. The second one he made was stupid. It looked like me and you out there playing pickup, having no idea what we were doing with that backup three. But he goes back-to-back threes. He ended up with 24. But the Jackets went on an 18-6 run with 7.5 minutes to go, and that all of a sudden became rearview mirror. But a really good win again for Georgia Tech. Kind of a weird resume already, right? Losses to Georgia State and Mercer, wins against Kentucky and at Nebraska. I still had high hopes for the Jackets. And, you know, you mentioned Moses Wright, but, you know, at the end of the day, 13 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. I still like his game, and he's going to be a problem for people in this league.
He had a block shot last night where he spiked the ball back down the highway to Omaha.
Yeah, sure did.
I mean, it's the dangest thing you've ever seen. I mean, he blocks the ball off the floor to the point where it bounces like out of play. So, nice win for Georgia Tech. Be interesting to see the Jackets continue on this run here before conference play begins. All right, I'm going to let you handle the last one of the night.
I will.
Because you were really concerned at some point last night, weren't you?
I'm going to be completely transparent. I pulled a Steve Spurrier last night. I quit. I watched about 10 minutes and just went, I can't do this. And Pitt could not throw it. I did. I pulled a Spurrier and just quit midstream. Just said, I ain't going no more. I'm done. That game last night, it's 17. I don't know, it was like 17-6 when I just went, I can't go anymore. We were like 10, 11 minutes into the game. And Pitt just simply could not make a shot. And I'm like, yikes. What in the world? I'll wake up tomorrow morning at 2:30 and get caught up on this one. And again, I was thrilled to death that Pitt wins the game. They led for a grand total of 5 seconds, but they led for the right 5 seconds. And that is the last 5 seconds. Oh, Champagne, man, what a night. 20 points, 20 rebounds, went off. And but I will tell you, that first 10 minutes was hard to watch. But I did. I had to pull a Spurrier and just threw in the towel and said, I quit. I'm done. I'm walking.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
A happy Thursday in ACC land after last night. That was good stuff. Thank goodness.
Yep.
Four up, four down. All right. Coach K is in the news. We'll get into that this segment. But COVID's a problem, Wes. And college basketball, much like college football here down the stretch, has really had a disruption problem. And the ACC is no different than anybody else. And that happens to be, again, going to be a storyline. And it's going to be that way, I think, all season long, vaccine or no vaccine, right? It's just going to be every hour, check your phone, look for headlines, and make sure that your team is still upright, moving forward, and trying to get games in. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard.
Yeah, basketball season's going to be a moving target as a result of the coronavirus. And again, the process and protocols off a positive test. You know, most basketball teams, I can't say all, but most basketball teams have established within their program some degree of a tier system. Tier one, tier two, tier three is the most commonly used system, and that's mostly with the National Football League. I think Major League Baseball used it as well. But now, because of the way the games are being paused and probably some of the ways they've been played, coaches are starting to question the value of actually playing the game. And after Duke's loss the other night to Illinois, Mike Krzyzewski openly questioned whether college basketball should continue to be played among the pandemic. And he spoke of a committee or leadership. And then we got back into the conversation that he had with you this past summer, Pac, and that is about the leadership in college basketball and the void of a, quote, czar, or the void of someone to step up and make a decision. You know, I pointed out yesterday in a radio interview, we still haven't heard from the NCAA on a minimum. You must have X number of players available or whatever. But be rest assured, they're already working on a plan for the tournament. We're a long way from the tournament at this point. I thought what Mike Krzyzewski said the other night, you know, about just an oversight committee or something like that, not being agile enough to handle this, I thought his comments were fairly candid, to be honest with you, and pretty accurate.
Well, he's been consistent. I will say that much, because he has been beating this drum. I will go back to a summer before this past one, and I did a town hall with him and Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, and they both openly discussed how difficult it is if the NBA had a question regarding the NCAA. Who do you call? I mean, what's the phone number? Who's the person that answers the phone? So this has been going on. This wasn't something that just popped up the other night after the Illinois game. Coach K has been really adamant and consistent with his position regarding that. I will just say this. I know we're going to run some sound bites here. But I think, again, you and I are sitting here in the comfort of our home. We're not coaches. These guys live it. We don't. We talk about it. Big difference. So I'll say that. I'll preface that before I give you what I think an opinion is, because quite frankly, what we have to say doesn't really matter. But from what I have seen over all the years, I don't want the NCAA to have to be the ones to make a decision. The one thing I've found about the NCAA, whether it's a waiver, whether it's any kind of decision, is it takes them 2 months to form the committee before they realize which resort are we going to go to discuss it and then create a subcommittee. I mean, I do think that during a pandemic, we've talked about being nimble and being flexible and being able to pivot. And pivot being a great word for basketball and for this. I think that each individual school, sitting here in the comfort of my home, I think each individual school has a better feel and handle for what is working and not working than somebody in Indianapolis in a subcommittee. Now, if you want to go eventually form one, that's fine. But you know what? You and I can give 1,000 opinions, but Tony Bennett knows Virginia basketball better than anybody in the world. Mike Krzyzewski knows Duke basketball better than anybody in the world. If they are not comfortable playing, whether that be from any kind of medical protocol, health officials, their own eyes, what they hear, what the players tell them, what they see. They have a better feel and handle on whether, hey, we're good to go, we've been approved to go, or whatever the case may be, or we need to pause and slow down. So, you know, and again, I know we're going to play the K sound bites and stuff, but I think each individual school, coach, player, athletic department, medical staff, health officials have a much better feel than some blanket organization going, hey, here is the rule to follow. So, again, I say that, again, with the preface that I don't coach, I don't go to practice, I get paid to give an opinion. But it seems to me if Coach K is not comfortable with where his team is and they're not ready to go, I think it's okay to say, hey, you know what, we might need to pause. And I'm not telling you they should because I don't know. But he does. I guarantee you he does. Right. Tony Bennett does. Steve Forbes absolutely does. Kevin Keats does. And you've seen a number of ACC teams already pause their operations. And that is okay. It's okay. It's a pandemic. You know, we hope to get all these games in. We hope they're on time. But we all, and I mean broadcasters, television networks, fans, you name it, we get it. This is going to be difficult. So whether you're 4-0, 0-4, whatever your record is, hey, that's almost secondary in my opinion. It's like this is a pandemic. What these student athletes are going through from a mental standpoint, from a physical standpoint, same thing with coaches during the holidays and all that stuff, you got to take all that into consideration. And if you don't think your team can compete for whatever reason you justify, then don't do it. You know, and let me tell you, even within the ACC footprint, we saw this in football. We've seen a school like Boston College do a phenomenal job, right? One positive test, over 8,000 during this go-around. We've seen a school like Florida State overnight go, guess what? We'd love to play today, but we only got 44 guys. It's different. You know, this what happens at Boston College isn't exactly what's happening at Florida State or anywhere in between. So if Coach K is uncomfortable, and again, I'm not saying he's saying it is or not, but if they're not ready to perform at optimum level because of COVID or whatever it may be, I think it's okay to say, hey, we need a timeout. We just need to reboot, chill out, figure this out, get healthy, and when we're ready to go, we'll do the best we can with our schedule. That's just my opinion.
There you go. No, and here's Coach K from comments the other night, post-game of the lost Illinois, regarding just playing the games and what he thinks ought to be done.
I don't think it feels right to anybody. I mean, everyone is concerned. You know, we made an assessment, or I'm not sure who leads college basketball. You know, it's done by committee. You have oversight committee. You have this committee, and anything that's led by committee is not agile in handling a situation. And so we made an assessment that, and there was a consensus. It wasn't like well planned that we're going to start November 25th. And that was made without knowing if there was going to be where the vaccine was, how many cases, you know, and basically it was more of a mentality of get as many games in as possible. And I would just like for the safety, the mental health and the physical health of our players and staff, for their, like, to assess where we're at, you know, in our country today, you have 2,000 deaths a day. You know, you have 200,000 cases, 1.5 million last week. You have people saying that the next 6 weeks are going to be the worst. To me, it's already pretty bad. And on the other side of it, there are these vaccines that are coming out that were, people say that by the end of the month, 20 million, you know, vaccine shots would be given, especially to our healthcare, to the, you know, the people who need it. And by the end of January, February, another 100 million. Well, should we not reassess that, and, see what would be best, And look, I'm going to do whatever they say. We're going to make the most out of everything we say, everything that's not, that's said. But yeah, it's a different time. It's just a different, time. And look, I just got my butt beat by a lot. So anything I say, someone can say, well, he's saying that because he got his butt beat. And do I think things should be done a little bit differently? Yeah. I mean, there, a lot of kids aren't going to be able to go home for Christmas. It's probably a time where they should, for mental health.
Like I said, he's been consistent. No question about that. But, I can't emphasize this enough. These coaches are on top of their programs. They know if they can go or not. And this is true whether we're talking hoops, football, women's tennis, field hockey, whatever. I mean, this pandemic has brought such unbelievable tightness in terms of your team and having to go through the mental discipline just to be healthy to practice, much less compete. So
right.
You've got to do what you got to do. And that's why, I think there's two separate issues there with what Kay was talking about, and that is, hey, are we doing this for the well-being? Are we in the right position to compete now? That's open for discussion. And the other issue is, who is running college basketball? The answer is nobody is, and nobody has.
That's correct.
Now, the NCAA runs the tournament, but that's not running basketball. That's running a basketball tournament. Two totally different things there.
Mm-hmm. Right, and a lot of people have been quick to point to Dan Gavitt during the offseason, who's the vice president of basketball operations for the NCAA. Well, he's over there trying to get, whatever March, April, May madness looks like put together, right?
Right. Yep.
He's not responsible for the ACC Big Ten Challenge. He's not responsible for somebody returning from a pause in their activities. And we touched on this briefly yesterday as it related to Virginia pausing their activities after a positive test came up within their program. Important to remember, as Pac said, the health regulations, rules, all those type things differ from state to state and municipality to municipality at times based on county restrictions and rules and things like that. Now, I want to finish on this from my standpoint. We've had two coaches in basketball touch on the same subject that just about every football coach we visited with this fall has discussed, Pac, and that's the mental health of these young people who have gone through this grind. And if you missed our visit with Gina Conte yesterday, who plays women's basketball at Wake Forest, she touched on the fact that it has been more intense once the season starts, that they did start the testing and the protocols and things of that nature back in the summer. Remember, basketball is just getting started, and they didn't come to campus all that long after football did, right, Mark? So by the time they finish, their investment in this could potentially be as long, maybe even longer, than the football investment. Remember, basketball by calendar is longer than football. And now we're talking about their investment to the protocols, the isolation, the social distancing, all those things. Oh, and meanwhile, as Coach K points, you still got virus numbers going north and not flattening or certainly going south. There's where I think the coaches also find themselves in that crossroads of playing versus the consequences, the mental health, all those type things. It is definitely going to continue to be a talking point, and I'm glad we got Seth Greenberg at 8 o'clock today because he talked about some things last week that I think are certainly applicable in a situation like this.
Hey, this is a grinder. There's no question. Like I said, nobody knows their team better than the respective head coach. And it doesn't matter what a talking head says. It doesn't matter what anybody says other than that coach. He sees these players every day and knows that, hey, we're good to go or we got issues. And I think it's okay if you end up having to say, we just can't go. We gotta chill here. So again, this is true in football. This has been true in hoops. It's been true in any sport since the middle of March. And we've seen it. So, you know, I don't think we need necessarily an organization that's got no feel for what you do on day-to-day basis to give a blanket to information. It's all fine and good, but you've got to do what you've got to do. And that's kind of where we are right now during this pandemic.
Yep. Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
It is game day in the ACC with Georgia Tech and Pitt going after each other tonight, God willing. So let's do a little football, Wes. We head into the weekend. I think maybe the best game of the whole weekend. I know we got Army-Navy, which is to me is always on its separate island. It's a different game versus everything else. But yep. North Carolina at Miami is a big-time game. Two teams ranked in the top 20. Kane's sitting there at the 10th spot. There is a lot riding on this. Potentially an Orange Bowl bid. Maybe an Orange Bowl bid to the winner of this game. So we'll see how this thing plays out. But there's some pressure on some guys this weekend. It's going to be fun. It's going to be good.
Who do you think, though? I mean, in the present and in the, to me, when we were talking about this, which team faces the most pressure? The current day situation, you would almost say Miami, right? I mean, yes. A chance to cross the bridge, get to the Orange Bowl. But in terms of what we just talked about a couple of weeks ago with Carolina trying to cross that bridge, you know, to solidify wins over ranked teams, things of that nature. I mean, I ended up kind of being split on this pack because I see where, you know, 6 months from now, the Miami game could be a huge win for Carolina. But in the next 2 weeks, it's Miami who clearly has the pressure of the win for Saturday.
Here's how I look at it. I think Miami has more to lose than North Carolina in this game. So, therefore, the pressure is on them. And, number one, they're at home. They're going to be debuting some unis, by the way. We'll get into that tomorrow probably. But Miami's got more to lose here. They got more at stake. They're the ones in the top 10. They're at the ones at home. They're the ones that lost to North Carolina a year ago, where they've talked about that this week, that game last year kind of put them behind the eight ball from an ACC run. I think they're the ones that are looking around the country going, hey, we're not getting any respect. We're in the top 10, and nobody talks about us. You know, North Carolina thought they had the hype with the Notre Dame game, and they fell flat in the second half, and the Irish shut them out. But I think this week, Miami at home in the top 10, you win this game, regardless of what happens in Charlotte, they've certainly positioned themselves for a number one, a really good year, and a big-time bowl. So I would say this one leans on Miami heading into the weekend.
All right, you've said, and properly I might add, that the ACC nationally will be a better league in football when Miami and Florida State and Virginia Tech are kind of on upticks, right?
Yep. One for three.
Given that commentary and where we may be in 2021, if you're talking about the league now, more pressure on Miami to finish on that uptick to be relevant in 21?
No question. Hey, everything Manny Diaz is building is momentum. And, you know, I saw a quote, too, from Derek King where he said, hey, you know what? Yeah, I wouldn't mind coming back maybe next year and playing. And to me, when you hear that, when you've got a quarterback, you've got a chance. And, Manny's done a tremendous job with the transfers. He's recruiting extremely well. You can kind of feel some momentum with their program. A year ago, you kind of felt it in early November, and then they went flat LLL to close it. Hey, they've been on a run since the Clemson game, and they got smacked and got a sense of, all right, that's what one of the elite groups looks like. We got work to do. And they've gone on the road. They've won games coming from behind. Now they got a chance to beat a top 20 team in North Carolina who beat them a year ago. Like I said, I think the pressure's on Miami on Saturday, and I think they've got more to lose than North Carolina. And if you win this game, you solidify yourself in the top 10, and you sit there and you go, guess what? We are headed in the right direction. And if you happen to get Derek King back next year, hey, there'll be a lot of folks talking about the U in 21.
Well, no kidding. second thought is, you've also talked, and I don't disagree with you, if Carolina finishes with four losses, do you question the progress? Does that create pressure for them Saturday, right? I mean, Carolina's had a good year. The disappointing losses are definitely Florida State for sure. Virginia has probably turned that into not such a bad loss, but nonetheless a loss that's disappointing. Second half against Notre Dame was a tough go of it. A loss Saturday to Miami, would that tarnish, the Tar Heel fall?
I don't know if I'd say fall, but I think North Carolina, given the fact that, hey, given this offense, which is as good as anybody you'd want to see, quarterback, wide receivers, line, running back, I mean, they've got it all you want from an offensive standpoint. If it turns out Miami wins the game and North Carolina ends with four L's, it feels kind of like right. A little bit of a lost opportunity to kind of take it to right. The next level. And I'm not telling you Mac can't get there. The guy's won a yeah. national championship. He knows what he's doing, and they've got momentum with recruiting and all that stuff, which is great. But it just kind of feels if North Carolina at mm-hmm. the end of this year has four losses, for me, heading into the season, given the fact you were number five in the country at one point in time, that would seem like a lost opportunity. You know, the Notre Dame game, hey, they kind of played small when it mattered the most in that second half. If you lose the Miami game, it's kind of a bummer, too. I lost at Florida State, right. Inexcusable, quite frankly, given where the Noles are. To me, that seems like a lost opportunity. But you win this game if you're North Carolina. Hey, same thing. Momentum, recruiting, three losses, can make the stake that, hey, guess what, we're the third best team in the league. And you put yourself in a great right. spot from a bowl position. So that's why this is a really important game. And it kind of feels like this one should have been played in the middle of October in terms of the momentum. You knew it was going to be at the back end of the schedule. But there is a lot riding on this game at the Hard Rock on Saturday.
All right. Let's pivot here. I got an idea, by the way, I want to bring up before we go to break. Virginia Tech doesn't have the same substantive kind of pressure in terms of your program, although, and you said this yesterday, and I agree, it seems like all the pressure in this one now is on the Hokies.
No doubt. No doubt. For a lot of reasons. Number one, the Hoos have the cup. All right, and let me tell you something. Every Virginia mm-hmm. fan I know has reminded every Hokie fan they know, guess what? We beat you guys, and we're coming to your town to beat you again. Yeah. I don't need to remind Virginia Tech Nation what it's been like in November and December. It has not been pretty. My man Foos needs a W, quite frankly. There's a lot of people buzzing and barking yeah. and all that noise, which never makes things easy. This is an in-state showdown game. These matter. This is not just a game. This game lasts you 365, 24/7. So I think at home, been a lousy 6 weeks for Virginia Tech. They really desperately need to end this thing with a W. And if you're Virginia, you're playing good football. You got your quarterback. Armstrong's playing lights out. You're on. You've got a momentum. You got a vibe to you. Broncos already kind of spelled out what the rest of your season's going to look like in terms of, hey, this is our game. We're not playing on the 19th. So you kind of know this one kind of feels like a bowl game, right? This one kind of feels like, hey, we're coming in here to absolutely put the flag at midfield with your water sprinklers that we own the state. So this has got a different fever to me than what you've got with North Carolina and Miami, which I think has larger national implications. This is one of those in-state, it matters games.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. All right, just a quick thought here before we get to break and more football on the other side here. You just mentioned the Eric King talking about potentially returning for 21, right?
That's what he said.
And we know Sam Howell is coming back for 21. And we're not, you know, we're not the schedule-making authority for the ACC network.
We are
right?
not. We promise you.
We'll acknowledge that.
Yep.
But I don't know. I mean, if the Eric King comes back and Sam Howell is going to be a junior, wouldn't you think that maybe you ought to see the Tar Heels and Canes on Labor Day night to start the ACC campaign?
Well, don't we have Notre Dame, Florida State? And I'm just asking out loud since you're coming up with an idea here. Don't we have Notre Dame, Florida State kicking things
what
off?
About doubleheader?
Hey, more than merrier.
Well, what about a doubleheader? We'll just make two games.
Are we going back to divisions? I mean, what is that going to look like? Do we know what we're doing there?
I don't know. I'm just sitting here offering ideas that we tend to do that every once in a while. You know, we tend to offer. don't we? We're just offering an idea. That's all we're doing, right? We're not telling.
I know this much. Regardless of when that game's played, it'll be a big deal next year. I promise you, because both of those teams will be catching a lot of love in the middle of the summer when we start really eyeballing what the 21 season looks like. North Carolina and Miami are going to be high on everybody's list. Promise you.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
The one and only Seth Greenberg coming up here at the top of the hour. Be hanging out with us for 30 minutes. So we got a lot to cover with Seth. But Wes, you pointed out the infamous 10:05 breaking news hit us yesterday.
Unbelievable.
Front and center.
It hits right in the head, didn't it?
Yep.
I mean, seriously, 10:05. I looked at the email. It said 10:05.
Yep.
What are you doing? All right. The ACC announced at 10:05 yesterday that the 2020 Dr. Pepper ACC Football Championship game capacity has been set at 7% of Bank of America Stadium in Uptown Charlotte, which means a capacity of 5,240 is all that will be allowed given the restrictions and regulations set forth by Governor Roy Cooper in the state of North Carolina. Considering that no fans will be allowed at the Fiesta or Rose Bowls this season, it may very well be the last chance anybody has a chance to see Notre Dame or Clemson live this year. These teams have been incredibly popular with their own fan bases. They were incredibly good television, too. NBC and Notre Dame collaboratively announcing, by the way, about their TV numbers. Here's the Clemson home games. Average attendance about 18,725. And Notre Dame's six home games average about 97,69. And obviously 5,240, significantly less. Also in the note from the Atlantic Coast Conference yesterday, all the tickets for the game have been taken. No kidding. If you had 155,000 seats, all the tickets for the game would be taken. Right, Pac?
I am going to make one of those stupid statements, which I tend to do from time to time. In my lifetime, in my children's lifetime, because they'll both be Clemson grads, this will be the hardest ACC championship football ticket ever. I mean, not only do you have two playing number three nationally, but we're just going to go ahead and put 5,240 socially distanced fans at Bank of America. I mean, it's really, you know, this is part of the pandemic. You knew it. But, man, if you're lucky enough to have one of those, man, that's the golden ticket to be sit there and watch those two teams because they are both terrific. And if the game is in the neighborhood of being as good as the first one, we're all in for a joy. And I don't care what team, what league you follow, Notre Dame Clemson next week. Should be awesome. Should be awesome.
Yeah. Just a sidebar note, Notre Dame announcing yesterday in a press conference with Jack Swarbrick that their NBC package this year, the entire five-game home slate on NBC was the school's most highly watched home schedule in 15 years. The Clemson game itself had a total audience of 217 million. Is the highest-rated Notre Dame football game on NBC since the Florida State game in 1993.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Hey, maybe you don't need SC, Stanford, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio. Hey,
Georgia.
The highest-rated games you got are the ACC teams. By the way, can I read real quickly? I know we're running out of time. Jack Swarbrick had a quote yesterday that I wrote down that I thought was very interesting. Hey. Swarbrick said, quote, "As we move forward, I'm thrilled to know that it may not be that important whether you continue to play 12 or 13 games. Insert smile here." And for folks that pay attention, for all those years that Notre Dame was, quote unquote, not in a conference and played only 12, while the 13th data point was a conference championship game, that was a point of contention every time Notre Dame has been in the neighborhood of a college football playoff. I thought that was a very important quote from Jack Swarbrick and one to put in your back pocket for years to come. Just saying. I'll let you guys connect the dots on that.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.